Welcome to Crunching Gears, the podcast. I'm Kevin Glendinning, and I've been a rally fan for more years than I care to remember. There are certain sounds or words that can transport you back 20, 30 years to standing on the ditch or tuning into RPM on a Thursday night. The intention of this podcast is to hear some of the stories behind those moments.
What could you do in a works car with works back up your leg, Frank? Take it handy and win every rally around.
Bertie Fisher and Andrew Nesbitt have made the 1999 event a classic, as we have already said. Never has so much been provided for so many by so few.
Proudest time on the seat of a rally car, because that day and that hour and those minutes, I got the bit between my teeth. You know, I really stood up and was counted and said, this is not getting away. I remember when we pulled on our helmets and Donald says to me, what are we doing? I said, we're going for gold, Barrett.
My first guest on Crunching Gears is Rory Kennedy. Rory has been a navigator for over 40 years, and in this time he has accrued over 50 victories around the world, including 4 Tarmac Championships, 2 British Championships. In this time also, Rory has competed at the highest level, WRC, ERC, across Europe, China and America. In this episode, Rory is going to tell his story. And he'll describe some fantastic highs, some devastating lows, and much more besides. I hope you enjoy.
Well, welcome along here, and tonight we're going to speak with Rory Kennedy. Rory, just to sort of, you know, a wee look back over your career and your highlights and I suppose the lowlights along the way too. How did you get involved in rallying in the first place?
How did we get involved? Well, first of all, good evening, Kevin, and thanks for asking me to do this, because I always enjoy this type of thing. And it gets a chance to reflect on the rallies over the years as well. So I know it's our first go at a podcast, and I suppose we'll live and learn as we go along here. Anyway, I'm involved in rallying for a long, long time. I set out in the rally. My father was a rally driver when I was very young. He was very much a clubman rally driver. He drove a Hillman Hunter and Hillman Imp, and he competed in the, I think it was maybe the 76, 77, 78 season, round about then, anyway. And he did some rallies then, and it was all very much a lot more simpler back then, because basically you could take your road car and convert it with a sump guard and whatever bit of safety equipment. I don't even think you needed a roll cage. But nevertheless, you could pretty much rally your own road car, and quite a lot of people did back then. And that's the way he got into it. And then he went from there to a Hillman Imp, which is a proper rally car, 998. I'm an imp back in the day, and I was lucky enough to be his co-driver on one occasion. I was third in our class on the I think it might have been the Hills of Donegal Rally, it was called then. And I started down in Milford, and of course, down in Milford, and I've used all the classic roads around Milford, and believe it or not, I've still got the road book from that very, very first event.
Right.
So that's how I got started off. And seven children in our house. And I'm the only one that really took up the my elder brother Kevin did a wee bit of rallying, but my younger brother Jimmy never got involved at all. And I'm the only buddy who continued it on.
Kept the tradition going.
Tradition going, aye. Yeah.
And then you fell in with another Letterkenny man, James Cullen. Like, how did you and James become friendly? Was it at school together, or?
Well, it's ironic, Kevin, because the Cullens were neighbours of ours up in Glencairn, Letterkenny, where we lived. And they lived a couple of hundred metres up the road from us. And of course, like all youngsters, you're playing football and all a bit through your childhood. And I was a bit younger than James. And but anyway, James was a great passion for rallying from a very early age. And he took great interest in my father's rallies. And he and I used to go servicing and stuff like that for my father. And really, he got the bug for it then as well. And like I say, he was a wee bit older, but he fancied himself as a co-driver back in that time. he managed to team up with Andy Higgerty, the late Andy Higgerty, who owned the Opel garage in Letterkenny. Yeah. He even started out as co-driver for Andy and had quite a few wee rallies, you know, around the country and stuff, and even did the Circuit of Ireland way back in 77, maybe, 1977. And I was very much part of the service crew and learning the ropes of reading the map and finding your way to the service area and being there on time and learning the ropes from a very early age, pretty much. James had a great appetite for it, and it's ironic to think that after all these years, James has won the Donegal Rally twice, and I'm fortunate enough to have won it four times. And it's amazing from our humble beginnings that we went to achieve that. You know, I find that one of our better achievements, if you like.
Yeah. And you took the plunge together in the late 70s. Was it the Mayo Rally?
In 79. It might have been late 78 or early 79. We did the Mayo Rally and we finished second overall. And Eamon Harvey won that rally. Eamon and Noel Harvey are two great competitors from Donegal as well. Mm-hmm. They won that rally that day, and we finished a very close second. And we might have won it only for we spun on the very last stage. But anyway, not taken away from the other boys. We were just complete rookies, say, very, very young, and all we knew was flat.
And did you know how close you were up to that, like, or at that stage?
Well, the results in them days weren't even like, obviously now you've got Channel Sport and all the internet to give you results. The Pattersons preceded that, and before that it was up to the co-drivers to try and figure it out, but we were rolling further back, and we didn't really know a lot about this one. We were very surprised when we found out we were second. But from very early days, James had demonstrated a great skill, a great driving skill, and great driving ability and understanding of the sport, you know. And of course, he went on to great things as well.
Yeah. You quickly progressed to the ranks as well yourself. Like, you weren't long, you were sitting the likes of James McDade, Vincent Bonner, guys like that. Like, how was them days? How did you progress so quickly up through the sport?
Well, the sport was, at that time, the sport was developing very quickly because lots of people were getting involved and it was a big appeal. And once you get into it, if you have a flair for anything, you know, you sort of and a good interest in it, you know, you become very dedicated, and I used to get about a lot and talk to all the drivers and, you know, learn as much as I could. But anyway, James went his way and I went my way, and I ended up with a driver from Derry, Charlie McGeady, and an Avenger. And Charlie's a great old driver, great man for a bit of sideways, and we had tremendous crack and great fun in all the local rallies, Maiden City rallies, Donegal Motor Club rallies, Sligo, and so on. Like, so we had some great rallies there. But then during the Donegal Rally one year, James McDade had a problem where they went off the road, but they got back on, and they weren't sure if they were OTL or not on the rally. And we were servicing beside me and Charlie McGeady. And James asked me to check the time card for them. And I checked it, and I said, I'm sorry, boys, you're OTL, you're out of the rally. And so on. But anyway, shortly after that, James rang me up and said, want to do the Sligo Rally? So we went to do the Sligo Rally. And we finished very well there, had a very good result. And James's cars are run by Sidney Meek, believe it or not, or built by Sidney Meek back then. So that wee link began away back then. I'm sure that was 82 or 83. Like, and we rallied together right up to 87.
Yeah.
That was an unbelievable time, really.
And obviously, you know, everybody remembers that infamous crash from 85. What's your memories of that?
Well, 85, we were in the Opel Scona. And Scona, them days, they were unbelievable bits of kit. Like, you know, the Manta had only just come on the stage at that point. And the Scona we had was ex-Jimmy McRae Rothman's car. So it was like a proper works car, if you like.
Yeah.
And we had it for Donegal. Of course, the big build-up to Donegal. We had been to the Circuit of Kerry a few weeks before that and finished second down there, first time out. So we came to Donegal with good confidence and, you know, with a good sort of notion we could push on here. And we had a very good Friday. We're right up there in the Friday, you know, in the top sixth or seventh, you know, pushing on rightly. And then, of course, we got to Saturday and the race really got on. Glenn, Garrigart, Alcala, and then Fannett Head. But we're pushing very hard in Fannett Head. It was Kildrome Lake at that stage. We're pushing very hard in that stage, and very near the end, we came to what they call the mass mount jump, and we sort of got the line wrong as we approached the jump, and we jumped too far to the right, and we hit the wall then, and obviously the rest is well documented. Mm-hmm. But I have to say, it's probably one of the biggest shunts ever I've had. And the car was very badly damaged afterwards. But we were very lucky both to walk away with no injuries whatsoever.
So that's the main thing at the end of it all, isn't it?
The main thing, there's still, if you look up there on the walls up here, there's pictures of that car coming jumping out. Uh-huh. One thing, if you can see that, there's up there.
Obviously iconic Donegal, isn't it, there, you know?
Exactly. And not only that, but, you know, if you go to YouTube, you can very quickly pick up that video of that accident too. So it's relived quite frequently. And I don't dwell on it, but obviously every now and again, have a look at that and I think, we're lucky to get away with that one, but it's a big accident, there's no doubt about it.
Like, it shows like the testament that the strength of the car is even back then too, like, so from the urban
Well, obviously it was an X-Works car and so on, but that was a shame really, but undeterred, it didn't put James off. He then reshelled that Ascona into a Manta. Uh-huh. And then we rallied on for a few years then with a Manta, and we finished third in Donegal in 87, so he shouldn't be underestimated. He was a great driver, great character, and you know, was very competitive in some events.
It didn't even particularly rally that much. He only maybe done maybe 5-6 events a year, and to step in and get back to that level every time, it showed the talent that was obviously there. Yeah. You know?
And maybe not even 5 or 6 rallies, maybe 3 or 4. Like was nearly as many as we did. Uh-huh. But he was a good driver. Used to take the yoke by the scruff of the neck and go at it. Like it didn't always work. It didn't always work. But we did one or two rallies. He won other rallies, you know, after that and before that. But me and him shared a bit of success. Sadly, he's no longer with us, you know, but great character. And, he contributed a lot to the sport, in all fairness,
And I'm just thinking here, 85, that you know, in the middle of all that, you get the phone call from Bertie Fisher to do the Cavan rally. How did that come about? You want to tell us the story behind that?
Well, that's almost an amazing story, really, unbelievable story. I had previously, in 85, I had done the Galway Rally with Robin Lyons. And Robin and I were in a wee sandbag, and we finished 10th overall and won the class, which was a very good result back then. It was very good. And then I did the circuit with Robin as well, which we didn't finish because we had an issue with the front driver, something happened to the drive shaft. But round about Easter, or before Easter, anyway, Bertie was going in the Manta, and I was going the circuit in the Manta, but he had no co-driver because Austin wasn't available. Austin Fraser wasn't available for whatever reason, I can't remember. So Bertie, he rang Robin Lyons the day before the rally, and says, "Do you know where I'll get a co-driver?" And Robin, of course, knowing the guy was mad for rally, and he says, "Oh, I know the very man for you. Go, Rory, I'll go with you, and here's his number." So Bertie rang our house. And of course, I wasn't there. My father was there and took the call. And I was going out with Paula at the time. Paula, who's now my wife. And she and I were away, and we were going to the Cavan rally the next day anyway. Uh-huh. So my father assured Bertie I'd be at the rally anyway, so not to worry, I would be there to go. So he went down to the rally, and sure enough, I arrived down at the rally, totally oblivious that he was looking me to go on the rally. And I was walking around, and Ian Cuddy, who was one of Bertie's men in the service crew, came up to me and says, "Have you seen Bertie?" And I says, "No." And I said, "Why?" And he says, "Well, he's looking at you to go on the rally because Austin's not here and he wants you to go." And I said, "Are you serious? Right, you have any pictures of this, Kevin?" Like, this is, I just arrived there. Uh-huh. And I had known Bertie, but Bertie was, that stage was a top rally driver, mega rally driver. I'd won the Ulster at that stage in 82 and, you know, competed very highly in all events and Ninemah, Circuit and everywhere else. And I'm like, sure enough, I got the nod, and I was totally amazed. I did the rally in the clothes I stood up in, with my jeans and my sweatshirt and my runners on me. That's the way I did the rally. And of course, what happened? Perfect start, perfect rally, we won the rally. And there was no pace notes in them days, so obviously there was no recce and stuff. Uh-huh. So we won the rally, which was amazing. Like, I'll never forget it. That was my very first rally victory. Uh-huh. And you never actually forget them things because it's like scoring your first goal. It's like winning your first race. It's just an outstanding memory that I have. Yeah. And even that day, I was that excited. I think we could lost going the first stage.
You're just overwhelmed by the whole thing, really. It's like,
that moment, in fairness, and even when I reflect on it now, I was quite sharp as a co-driver early on. You know, I was always switched on to it. And, Once I settled down and got the thing, we had a great day and we really enjoyed it. And I remember we had a great rapport between each other.
Yes.
So we won the rally anyway, and it was a perfect start. And little did I know at that point that the seed was set pretty much then.
That was the seed was planted then, really, for
looking back now, I can safely say that was the day that the future was panned out, or the future was going.
Vincent Bonner in the meantime too came along.
You see, I'd moved on from just doing the local rallies and special rally and the national rallies to the international rallies.
Yes.
And I'd done the circuit in Galway, and I'd done Isle of Man, and I'd done Killarney and Ulster and all these, and was gaining more experience. So Vincent, he decided he was doing the circuit, and because I had a good bit of experience having done the circuit two or three times prior to that, he asked me to go on a course. I said, yeah, no problem. Sidney Meek was running us in them days. Ronald Bertie, who was familiar with, he was partly running James McDade, but Sidney ran us on the circuit that year. And again, Vincent Bonner, he had just won Donegal in 83, you know, but this was 86 or 7, was it? And we know, and then we do the rally, and we're going really well. Fifth or sixth, maybe, and going really well on the Friday, the Saturday, and the Sunday. And on the Monday morning, somewhere down around Tipperary on the way back up, we sailed off the road, and we couldn't get back on, and we retired. And Vincent and I did a good few rallies after that. Monaghan and so on, which we won together. I can't remember the ones, but we did win some together. But that was the year he went on to win the national championship outright.
Right, yeah.
But I missed the title because I was with him all year. But I missed out on the title because I got an opportunity to go and do my first World Rally with Richard Hall.
Yeah.
And Richard Hall and I went and did Rally GB.
Oh, you went and done GB, yeah.
That was the first rally, and I think that was 87 now.
I was 87, yeah. Had you done GB or RAC rally as it was then, I suppose.
RAC as it was then, yeah. And so I missed the last round, and Vincent went on the last round, won the rally and won the championship. And if I had him with him, probably won the, that was the national championship back then. Ironically enough, it was sponsored by Anglo-Irish Bank, I think, back in them days. Like. Richard Hall and me then did the British Championship for 2 years in a row. We did it 1 year with Mazda. First year was the Mazda, sponsored by Fram Filters. We did the entire championship, finished 10th in the BRC and reasonably well in the class, second or third in the class within the championship. And then the second year, which might have been 88, we had Louise Aiken Walker's 205 Works Persian. I can't really remember how we finished, but we did all the rallies, did quite well. We had a few accidents as well along the way.
Yeah.
But Nicky and I did a good few rallies, and we learned a lot together. We did a lot of them big rallies, and it was a great learning process, and it was great fun, and it was very,
an adventure for the both of you, wasn't it, really?
Absolute adventure, and, you know, every rally was your way to Yorkshire, your way to Wales, your way to Scotland, Isle of Man, Ulster Circuit, you know, them type of rallies. You know, you learn more and do one of them rallies than you do six national rallies. Like,
And as you say, you get your first WRC experience as well. With
first WRC, yeah.
How did that for you?
It was during the time that the RAC did all the stately homes on the first day. You know, Chatsworth and Oulton Park and all these, you know, stately homes and all the first day.
Yeah.
Going very well, going really well, enjoying it. And on the second day in Wales, or at the end of the second day in Wales, the clutch went. And it was a Mazda 4x4, and there was no way we could replace the clutch. It was just too big of a job. We didn't have one, I think, anyway.
Right.
We couldn't have done it within the time frame. I remember well, Chris Patterson was our map reader and the service man and all them rallies as well.
No pressure on Chris.
That's right. And that's why we all came up, you see. You know, we're all, it all happens, and we all came up through the grade.
And then 89 again, Verticom calling again, looking for you to do the Manx National in Donegal.
Well, the way that came about, Kevin, was Bertie said to me, and again, we were at the Galway Rally. I was only spectating, I think, or I wasn't doing very much. And Bertie, he arrived down to do gravel crew for Hugh O'Brien. And he came to me that night and he said, if you're free for June, he said, I'll be needing you. And I said, oh, very good. How's this come about? He said, Austin hurt his back, Austin Fraser, and he's going to have an operation or something, or he was getting something done at that time. And would I be available? Of course, I was right away available. Of course, I said, yeah. And this is the M3 now. Mm-hmm. You know, that era, 1989 or 80, 89?
90, 90,
89.
You're right, sorry, you're right.
89. Mm-hmm. So that was Galway, and he and I actually went out the next day to do gravel crew for Hugh O'Brien on the rally.
Yeah.
So that was fine. And it was all part of it, like, if you think back on it now. Mm-hmm. And we then decided to do the Manx National Rally as a warm-up for Donegal. Mm-hmm. Because Donegal was a big target. Wanted the car 100% right, the M3 100% right, to stage a big attack in Donegal. So it was decided we'd go and do the Manx Rally, Manx National.
Uh-huh.
We went and did that, and of course, here we go again, won the rally.
Yeah.
We had 100% record for events. We won Cavan, and we won the Manx.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, that was good, fantastic. Jeez, I was fucking blown away by all of this. It was unbelievable. And then came Donegal in 89, and we raced David Llewellyn all the way, if you remember.
Uh-huh.
I think it was towards the end that he aged out and got in front of us.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know what the final margin was. But we were right with him the whole way, or for a lot of the way.
Uh-huh.
If I remember right.
And that, everybody thought that this four-wheel drive car was never going to last the distance too. I think maybe exactly, even Bertie had this notion it was going to break down too, didn't he? You know?
At some point, aye.
Uh-huh.
And I wouldn't mind, but it was the works Toyota team for the British Championship that year.
Uh-huh.
And they came to Donegal because Shell was a big part of their sponsorship. Shell were sponsoring the rally, so it was part of that that brought them to Donegal.
Yeah.
So we went hammer and tongs with them for 3 days, but anyway, they won out in the end, but we had a very strong second place.
Uh-huh.
So that was 89.
Uh-huh. And, 90 then, Austin stepped away, and Austin Fraser stepped away then in 90, was it?
Austin retired after Killarney in 89, as far as I recall.
Uh-huh.
And I got the nod to come up to step up then. So I really had 100% record up to that. So then we are well up to Donegal. But then our very next, our rally, first rally, full-time rally then was 1990 Galway Rally, where the two BMs, McHale and ourselves,
uh-huh.
and we were leading, going well, leading reasonable gap. And what happened? The freaking alternator gave up. And of course, Galway Rally, winter rally, treacherous conditions, wipers flat out, uh-huh. heaters on, blowers going, heated screen, and just destroyed, just ate the battery.
Uh-huh.
We're at the alternator and we get stranded on the stage. And we're very lucky to get a battery and jump leads, and we're able to get off the stage and get into service and get it fixed.
Uh-huh.
But we lost the rally. Like, we ended up second, go back to second, but we lost the rally. So that was the start of that.
Yeah.
And next rally was the circuit, Race McHale. We're in front of him in the north, down south then, down in Kilkenny. He started to claw back. And then we went wide in the corner and hit a telegraph pole and took a back wheel off. And game over again.
Yeah.
Where were we then? Killarney then, after that?
No, Killarney was still late in the year that day, wouldn't it be?
Well, Killarney was late in the year then, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That was the circuit.
Uh-huh. Must have been Donegal then.
Yeah, been on my eye.
Mm.
And that was 1990, Donegal, you know what happened there?
Uh-huh.
All the way again.
Uh-huh. And Bonner was involved in that too, wasn't he? That big battle too.
Bonner, three of us. That's who was leading for a good bit.
Yeah.
We were leading for a bit. And then towards on the Sunday morning, we had a tire change down after the mucky stage. Whatever the frig happened, when they jacked the car up, you need a T-bar to put on the jack to jack the bar to get the car to lift up off the wheels off the ground.
Right.
And whatever happened, something happened with the T-bar and it couldn't either be got or it didn't fit right or something. And we lost 2 or 3 minutes. We were 2 or 3 minutes late coming into the stage. And mm-hmm. I bragged away at the timekeepers. And the timekeeper only penalised me for 1 minute, which was 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So subsequently, we won the rally by 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
But we lost it because we lost it by nine because we had a 10-second penalty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you can imagine
that. Simple. Just, yeah. So, mm-hmm.
So anyway, Austin went on to win the rally, and fair play to him. Look, was,
uh-huh. And that was Austin's first Donegal one then as well, obviously, too. So.
Probably was, wasn't it?
Uh-huh, yeah.
I'm in Dermot O'Gorman. Dermot's first year as well.
Did it look easy?
So anyway,
yes.
Wait till Ulster after that, I think.
Uh-huh.
second in Ulster as well.
Uh-huh.
A great comeback drive. Something happened to us in the first day. Got that sorted, came back and finished second. To
McRae, wasn't it? That? No, it wasn't McRae, no. White Collins.
Llewellyn,
was it? 1999. No, was that 89?
He didn't
make
it right again, Kevin.
No, I wouldn't be sure myself. Yeah.
Yeah, came back and finished second there. Uh-huh. And of course, then.
Yes.
Manx.
Uh-huh.
So, it was decided from a good bit back we're going to make a concerted effort to try and get this event won that way. So the Manxes are an open recce. You could go on recce as often as you want from a certain period, from about a month before the rally, right up to maybe 2 hours before the start of the rally was the recce period. And it was open recce. And a lot of times the stages of the night of man go the same opposite directions times. Mm-hmm. And they go the opposite direction, turn right 1 minute, next minute you turn left. So it's a combination of all the same roads and various directions. So we went over a couple of weeks beforehand and did the job of writing all the notes, got all that done, and then a weekend again, a few weeks later, went over and did a proper recce with the notes made, adjusting and adding bits in, and then went over finally to come up with a, if you like, the final draft. So we got the notes really right, and we put a huge effort into it. And then the car came, Pro Drive again, we're on this in them days,
mm-hmm.
came to the rally, and we led from the start. And now don't forget, we had Brooks, mm-hmm. Craig, Gwendolf, James Cullen, David Greer,
and so on. And the cream of British and Irish rallying at that time, wasn't it?
At that time, I could list Ross McHale, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Maher, maybe even at that time. Anyway, they were all there, and we led the rally for 2.5 days.
Yeah.
Third day, with this incident where we're still leading, come off 3 or 4 stages from the end, we come off the stage, change the tyres, headed off the stage, on the road section, come around a corner, there was a van doing a 3-point turn in the middle of the road. And we came around the corner at 60 miles an hour, and we had nowhere to go except up over the top of a curb of a footpath to avoid them. And in doing so, we punctured the front wheel and bent the steering. And Gavin, this is literally us going to the start of the stage. So we continued up the stage, we went into the rival control and clocked in on our time.
Mm-hmm.
And during them days, you used to be able to get permission from the timekeeper to change a puncture if you had one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was the rules. That was all within the rules. So yeah. We requested permission, which we got. So we set about changing the wheel, which really meant that the car behind us would go ahead past, start the stage, and the next one, to whatever time we had the tire changed. But you're allocated 3 minutes. And once you go over the 3 minutes, you get into your lateness. And when you start to use your lateness, you're penalized 10 seconds per minute.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, the rave was all to get the wheel changed within 3 minutes, which I'm glad to say we did do within 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And then we rolled up the start, and they give you a new start time, and off you go up the stage. That's the rule. Well, that was the rule at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we were first on the road, you see, and Brooks was second. So what happened was, when we stopped to change the wheel, Brooks came up past us and went on up the start control. And he started to debate with the timekeeper that we shouldn't be allowed to change our wheel, and all this was going on. But what happened to Brooks was, when you clocked in at the arrival control, you're given your start time at the arrival control, which is 3 minutes later. So you go, when you're at the arrival control, you check in, you get your start time, you roll up, start timekeeper looks at the time card and signs it and gives it back to you. That's the way it was then.
Uh-huh.
And then 3 minutes later, 3, 2, 1, go.
Uh-huh.
Not the clocks like they have now. But anyway, Brooksy and the marshals were debating away about this. And his 3 minutes elapsed. And he didn't start the stage for 5 minutes from the rail control to the start.
Uh-huh.
Which meant if you don't start on time, there's a 5 minute penalty. So way he went on the stage, we changed the wheel, so on, back in the car, away we went. Midway through the stage, for whatever reason, the steering was bent, we had a rock, got a puncture. And we drove the rest of the stage and dropped the minute. Anyway, disaster.
Mm-hmm.
So, surprisingly enough then, when the organisers got the time cards in, they looked at Brooks, penalised him 5 minutes, brought them way back, us back in the lead.
Yeah.
So then what happened anyway, of course, Brooks, he queried this 5 minute penalty, protested or whatever. Anyway, it was scrubbed.
Uh-huh.
And then he got reinstated again.
Right.
Then we looked at this, and this is what our quandary was then. It wasn't that we were trying to get an unfair advantage in any shape or form.
No.
All we queried then was, Why was Brooks's 5 minutes penalty rescinded? Why? That was the grounds of our penalty. Because he was clearly late and starting the stage. And that was our query. And we put that query in. And then that's what all the debating was went on about. And it went on for ages and ages and ages. Uh-huh. And finally, the stewards of the meeting, they ruled that they were right to rescind the penalty for whatever reason. I can't quite remember.
Right.
And Brooks ended up on the rally. It was devastating. It was the worst disappointment I've ever had in a rally. And I've had quite a few. But honest to God, there's nearly tears in my eyes. I couldn't hardly believe it. Like, anyway, lost the rally.
I was looking at the times. Like, you were quickest on 18 of the first 35 stages or something like that. It was something, you know, you were dominant that weekend, really, you know.
And you
know,
said it. You said it. 18 out of the 35 stages. 35 stages.
Yeah.
The Donegal Rally in 2018 was 20 stages.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And again, there was another 5 stages after you'd had your incident then or whatever. You know.
Yeah, that's still to do, yeah. But anyway, Kevin, it's a bit like this rally business. I often think about what's the appeal to rallying. Like, you know, why do you keep, people say to me, why do you keep doing it? And, you know, wise up and save yourself. You learn some great lessons in rallying.
Yeah.
And you learn, most importantly, you learn to deal with things like that. That disappointment there. Like, I mean, it's unbelievable. Shock to the system to have to deal with, having led for so long and held on and not really done anything wrong, to get snatched away from you at the very last second. Like, heart wrenching. So, rallying, you know, in a lot of ways, rallying and motorsport, it teaches you how to deal with these things. You go through these experiences and you learn from them and you say, that's never going to happen again, or if it does, I'm going to try, you know, you try and prevent it from happening again. Anyway. And that was 90, and believe it or not, 3 weeks later we went to Cork and went off the road in freaking Cork as well.
Yeah.
Disaster. And then we went for the Rally of the Lakes at the end of 1990. And we had no chance in the championship. We healed the championship pretty much tied up. And to make a very long story short, he broke down half a dozen stages from the end. And we went on, won the rally, our first major rally win, and the championship coincided.
Yeah. And that worked out. That year the Russians was over as well, too.
That was 1990 as well.
Yeah.
They were revelation too. But even so, like, we had a slow start. There was frost on that rally, Kevin.
Right.
The conditions, and there was night time and all. And the first day was a bit different. But generally, we were like, I looked at the times one time there recently. And after 4 stages, from then on, we were right there on the pace. Like,
Just a wee while just to get yourselves up to it and just comfortable.
Yeah. Well, the conditions, like, there was no ice crew, like, and the freaking roads were treacherous. Like.
Yeah, better safe than sorry.
But that was it. And then the next year, surprisingly enough, then in 1991, even when you say them words 1991, it seems an eternity ago. But Verdi wasn't ready. We weren't geared up for Galway. Because there's no options or no cars available and things. ProDrive gave us, here's a good, interesting story. We were hoping to get a car. ProDrive were going to do the British Championship, but they hadn't said who the driver was going to be yet. And Bertie was sort of on the hunt because the great drive in the Manx and won the championship and all. So ProDrive were thinking something was coming, but weren't sure what it was. So it turned out we were getting the Group A car for the first round. I think it was a national breakdown of the Talkland Rally, they called it. So, anyway, national breakdown, maybe it was called.
Track Road or something, wasn't it called?
Well, it's Rally Yorkshire, but I think they called it, that time it was called the National Breakdown. Could be wrong, I think that's what it was called. Anyway, Road Drive, we're getting the Group A car for that. Get a semi-works drive. That was great. I went over, met Bertie at the airport, flew over, landed in Birmingham, into the hire car. We went to Myra testing. Proving ground that all the car manufacturers use for testing their cars and commercial vehicles and so on. We went there with one of the ProDrive boys who picked us up at the airport, brought us there, and you drive in, it's high security because there's all sorts of projects going on there. We drove in and we came to a red light in the darkness and we had to wait for the red light to go green. As soon as it went green, you drive down underneath the tunnel and you come out on the other side and you come up, and it's like a race circuit. You come up on an infield of a race circuit. When you went down underneath, you were driving underneath the racetrack.
Oh, yes.
Right. and you come up on the level on the inside of the track. Uh-huh. You come up on the level on the inside of the track. For the first time ever, here was the Rothmans legacy that Colin McRae was going to drive on the British Championship. And he was there, the car was there, and our Group A car was there, and this was the test. It was nighttime.
Uh-huh.
I remember coming up and look, I didn't know McRae was going to be driving this car.
Yeah.
I didn't know that Rothmans were even sponsored at that stage.
Uh-huh.
This could be 2 weeks before the rally or whatever it was like.
Yeah.
I looked at it, friggin' hell, like, this is unbelievable. This stuff, you had to wait until Thursday to get your Motor News to read about.
Uh-huh. Yes, there's no internet or nothing.
Here it was, like. Oh, it was, I remember that distinctly, you know. And we did the rally. We did that rally and went the Group A car, but it was an ill-fated thing because the Group A car, gearbox wasn't strong enough like you are. Like,
no.
Plenty of air and all the rest. Gearbox, uh-huh. It was sort of destined to give up, you know. So we never drove that car again. And we never drove that car again. And ProDrive had no more cars for us at that point.
Uh-huh.
Rarely went to RED, mm-hmm. Rally Engineering Development.
Yes.
We run quite a lot of top drivers, like,
mm-hmm.
in the British Championship in the past. Ron Brooks the year before.
Yes.
In the Sierras, like.
Uh-huh.
We went to RED and we got the car that beat us on the Manx. You get that?
Yes.
Brooks car. And RED run us on that season, 1991. We did all the rallies. John Millington was our team manager. John Millington, who was the team manager, legendary team manager, uh-huh. with M4 for years,
yes.
on the World Championship. And one of the best men I ever worked with, and I have great admiration for him. I hold him in the highest respect. Great fella. And I do often be in contact with him on Facebook as well. But just, uh-huh. to mention that, he was there at that time. And then he went to M-Sport just directly after that.
Uh-huh.
We were with RED all that year with the Sierra Sapphire.
Uh-huh.
We won, what do you say, first rally, West Cork.
Mm-hmm.
Best circuit Ireland.
Yes.
We bent her, we rolled her, wrecked her. Even a big accident. We're going well, got a puncture, started to try and catch up again over a big jump.
Uh-huh.
Lost control and crashed, wrecked her. I remember the car sitting on the side, and my door was down on the ground down here, and I sit and say, you know, level with the road on the side.
Uh-huh.
And buried it up there, and he put his foot down on my door bar, and he just walked right through the windscreen. Just walked out, hey.
Uh-huh.
I never forget the car wreck, and the circuit was only 2 weeks away, or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
RED took the car away, and that reshelled it, and we got it back for the circuit, but the car wasn't right. The
uh-huh.
settings weren't right, and we had, I don't know, third or fourth on the circuit, like, we finished.
Uh-huh.
Third or fourth. Colin McRae and them all were going again in them days, like.
Yeah.
And then we went, I think, where did we go after that? Again, the circuit. I think it was Donegal then, after the circuit in them days.
Probably would have been again, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Donegal was the year the cat went off and fanned it, do you remember,
yeah.
that?
Uh-huh.
Freaking rally there.
Uh-huh.
Then I thought I was going to get the boot after that, but survived that.
Yes.
Kept on. And from that moment on, our very next rally was Ulster. We won the rally.
Uh-huh.
Gray was there, Brooks was there, going to have the whole lot again. We won, yeah. the rally. And then we went to Manx, and she broke down on the second stage. And then we went to Killarney and won the rally again.
Uh-huh.
That was the start of the great run. We won.
Ah, yes, it's a fantastic run in Killarney.
And so, Kevin, I could go on and on and on about it, like, from year to year to year, but it's very repetitive, you know.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But we'll just look at the Subaru years. You know, what was it? You know, they were like, were they a real big step forward, or was it natural progression at that time, or?
Well, if you think about it, it was 92 onwards that the Subarus came in for us.
Uh-huh.
McKinstry got his the year before, I think.
Uh-huh.
Remember the Caliber car?
Yeah.
And then our car came about in 92, and we had the legacies for 92 and 93 and 92 and 93.
Uh-huh.
We got the Impreza in 94, and then we got a very good Impreza in 95 that we used for a good few years, and then with the Silver car in the end up, like.
Yeah.
But them were the glory years. I think I've seen the best years of rallying, really.
Uh-huh.
I think back in it. You know, in them cars, and the races we had with McHale, McRae, and Brooks, and Gwendolf, James Cullen, McKinstry, McHale, Frank Maher. Oh, geez, I could go on. Like, there's some incredible drivers back through the years.
Uh-huh.
And, like, if we didn't win, chances are McHale won.
Yeah.
If McHale didn't win, the chances are we won. And if Brady was here today and you asked him who's the toughest driver he ever competed against, I have no doubt he would say Austin McHale.
Uh-huh.
No doubt he would say, Austin McHale was the toughest. And hard as not to crack.
Yeah, like they never give up. That was the thing with McHale.
Never give up. Always. Again, I have great admiration for him too. Yeah. And, you know, and a lot of times the machinery may have been the greatest thing.
Yes. But he took the best out of it, didn't he? Really,
the best out, he was dogged. Even if you look back at some of them videos you see of him now, even in the RS2000 and stuff way back years ago.
Yes.
Unbelievable. Uh-huh.
And just, you know, we talked about McHale. What about the, was it, what year was it in the circuit? You had the big battle, and you know, the infamous time penalty, you know, you were declared the winner. And
yeah, I don't even remember what year it was, but it's one of the big circuits, like it's one of the proper 4-day circuits.
Uh-huh. 98.
And, 98. And anyway, they had a problem, anyway. They got penalized early on for a minute early at the control. Now, it was very petty what he's done for. Anyway, yeah, irrespective of whether it was right or wrong, it's petty enough to do what he done there. Mm-hmm. What he did was, you wait at the yellow board, you know, you come to the yellow board, you wait there, a minute before your due time, you can cross the yellow board and go into control. But the marshal insisted that when McHale came to the yellow board, he entered the control zone. In other words, he crossed the yellow board by uh-huh. 1 or 2 or 3 meters or half a meter. Uh-huh. Can't remember the exact detail. And the marshal, then when he came up, the timekeeper handed out the card, and the timekeeper told him you had entered the control area a minute ago, so there you are. I'm doing you for a minute early. Right. But petty, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if it happened to me, I would have brought the house down about it there and then.
Uh-huh.
So first and foremost, I want to say that. So they got penalized very early in the rally. That was the first day of the rally on the Friday. Uh-huh. They got a minute penalty. A minute's an eternity when you're close, when you're racing,
yeah.
Like 10 seconds an eternity.
Uh-huh.
You can't give anything away. So they lost a minute, and this penalty was lying there all the way through the rally. And of course, Boss McHale and Brian Murphy weren't too happy about this now. And they had every mind to create a whole stink about it when the time came. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we ended up leading the rally, and we came to the very last stage of the rally, 18 miles long. Hamilton's Folly, actually.
Yeah,
way up in the Moore Mountains. Anyway, away we went on the stage, and McHale beat us by, let me get this right now. McHale beat us by 19 seconds. And we were leading the rally by a minute and 18.
Uh-huh.
So if McHale's penalty was scrubbed, he would win the rally by whatever.
1 second or whatever it was.
Maybe not one. Maybe not. I can't quite remember. Maybe it wasn't uh-huh. quite. But anyway, if the penalty that he'd gotten 3 days previous or previous 4 days,
uh-huh.
if he got that scrubbed, he was the winner. Because he was fast. He was faster than us. And it could have been a second. You know?
I think it was a second, yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, he beat us by 19 seconds on the stage or something like that. Uh-huh. Because during the stage, we had rain, snow, and dry. It was unbelievable conditions. Like.
Uh-huh.
So, that night, McHale queried or protested his penalty, which he had every right to do, mm-hmm. absolutely every right to do. And if it was us, we would have done the same. And he wasn't protesting against us.
Yep.
He was protesting that the organizers penalized him incorrectly.
Mm-hmm.
So he protested that the stewards couldn't decide. And what the stewards decided, they couldn't decide that night. So at the prize given, there was no first or second place overall presented.
Yeah.
Even though we were the winners on uh-huh. paper, we
played the champion. Yeah.
Uh-huh. There's a picture here somewhere. Right out in the kitchen there.
Uh-huh.
Us spraying the champagne at that rally. The kitchen, I think. And all the rest of it, and we did got all the accolade for winning, but we always knew this was coming.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, what the stewards decided to do, they would go to the location of the stage, they would measure exactly how far it was from the yellow board to where the control was, because it had to be 25 meters, was a stipulated distance. And let's say, for example, it was 26 meters or 24 meters or greater or lesser than that. Well, then the control was set up incorrectly. Technically, the control wasn't set up correctly.
Yeah.
Irrespective of if they come through the yellow board or not.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, they measured it up, and they discovered that the board wasn't 25 meters from the control car. I don't know, was it less or more or whatever.
Yeah.
So by doing that, then they had to debate, was the control was null and void anyway. And anybody that incurred a penalty there would have it scrapped. But it took 2 days for them to decide that. Now, in the meantime, Kevin, I'm back at work, flat out in my business, working away.
Uh-huh.
4 o'clock or 5 o'clock in the evening, the phone rings, and somebody rings me, some of the stewards or whoever the chairman of the stewards was, rang me and says, Roy, this is whoever, and we're just ringing to tell you that McHale's penalty has been scrapped, and Os McHale is now declared the winner of the rally. Now, this was on, the rally ended on Monday, Easter uh-huh. Monday. This was probably Wednesday, uh-huh. 4 or 5 o'clock, that I got this phone call. In the meantime, Bertie and I have been talking about this, you know, any word or what's any,
uh-huh.
no word about it, no word about it. And then finally, I don't think that they got to ring him, they rang me, like.
Oh, if you had to break the news that Bertie then.
They rang me and says, well, and said, look, we're just telling you this. And I says, we needed a letter or fax or whatever it was at that time to confirm this. And we would consider our options then, because uh-huh. we have the right to appeal then.
Right.
Anyway, so anyway, I rang Bertie and of course, very disappointing. I mean, mm-hmm. Circuit Ireland, Kevin, like, ask any driver or any competitor.
Uh-huh.
It's an unbelievable event. Like, yeah. Your granny could tell you about the Circuit Ireland. Like,
exactly. You know, that's a household name, isn't it? Yeah.
Household name. You go back to Paddy Hopkirk and mm-hmm. Adrian Boyd and Cal Curley and Billy Coleman. And
mm-hmm.
All them names in Circuit Ireland. And to lose the Circuit Ireland, I guess, was very hard to take.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we were Tough Mac sponsored in them days, big time. Sydney was involved, self and Bertie and all, sat around the table and drafted a letter to say we accepted the decision of the stewards. We, even though we didn't think, we have nothing against Os McHale, nothing, he's every right to do what he'd done.
Yep.
And he did it, and he won the rally, and good luck to him. And Bertie sent him a bottle of champagne the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it ended. Like,
yeah.
You know. And surprisingly enough, I remember when we won the circuit 1 year without any issues, the next day I got a bottle of champagne in the, delivered to me.
Uh-huh.
He got one simultaneously from Os McHale.
Yeah.
So mm-hmm. there was a huge respect there among us, even though you would have fucking, you would have broke stone to beat them, like.
Yeah.
Know,
but when the rally was over, the respect and the, was there between you.
Yeah, absolutely, all the way. So anyway, that's how that ended, Kevin. But
yeah.
Look, since that, we went on to win the circuit, and
uh-huh.
we probably won a previous time. We won it in 95 as well.
And then the following year, you had the big battle then with Nesbitt too.
Nesbitt, aye.
Morning again, that was just a few seconds, you know, 2 or 3 seconds.
Great
rally.
You think of them rallies back then, how close they were, like.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, wasn't it? Yeah. And like you them 4 days, and you know, it wasn't like 20 stages, it could have been 35, 40, maybe more, you know.
Maybe more, and don't forget, we had to do the recce for that as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We had to go and recce that for maybe 2 weekends away before the rally even. And what's more, we had to plan the whole thing with all the people,
mm-hmm.
all the service vehicles, tire vans, mm-hmm. merchandisers, gravel crew, motorhome. Oh, for goodness sake, I'm marking maps and sorting it all out. And,
uh-huh.
You know, it was some setup. Like, we had a great team, though. We had a fantastic team.
Yeah.
All the boys involved in our team, like Robbie, Norman Burns, Adrian Kirkland, Ian Cutting, even Kevin Harley, Jimmy Murray. Chris Meek, Chris is our tire man. Sydney, Kieran, Megan Allen, Brian Quinn, Bertie, myself, even Mark Fisher, Jerry McGarty in odd time. Like, the team were all rally men.
Yeah.
You know, every single one of us was a rally man, true and truly. Like.
Aye, and they knew how much it meant then. Really.
Aye, and they knew everything about it too. You never had to tell them. The boys all knew the rules. Like, everybody knew, you know, but when something came up, you know, it had to be dealt with. Like, and I must say, there was great honour in our team as well. We would never try and take an unfair advantage. We would take whatever advantage we could get,
uh-huh.
not an unfair advantage. Like.
No. Mm-hmm. And you just mentioned Mark there, Mark Fisher. Like, you sat with Mark and you done a few events with Mark, and most notably, you know, you done 2 RACs with him, in the V Micra and then the SEAT. You know, was that nice to continue into that relationship there too?
Oh, God, it was a great time. Like, Mark was an unbelievable fella. He was, like, Mark's future, I would have been unbelievable if he had a but really, when Mark won the RAC drive, because he had competed with Nissan Challenge, Micro Challenge.
Uh-huh.
And I think part of that was that if he finished wherever, he got to drive in the RAC. He drove his own car, but Team Nissan, Team Nissan Europe were our team.
Uh-huh.
We still had Jerry McGarty and 2 other boys with us as well. And we did the rally. Me and Mark did. Bernie said to me, "You're going with Mark and RAC." I said, "Oh, well, I'm quite happy to do that. But you can only recce part of it. I could, no, I could only get a certain amount of time. I couldn't recce the whole rally because I had a business. So I went over on the Saturday and Sunday and recce. I come back on Sunday night to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Back over on Thursday for scrutiny and all of that. Start the rally on Friday. In the meantime, Mark had got somebody else to recce the stages and wheels. And they had amended all the notes. And then I went over. It was organizer notes anyway. Uh-huh. And I went over and away we went from there. So we had a wee micro high and we're number 100 and something, 112 or something. There's a picture of that somewhere too. Right? But the funniest thing, hey, we used to call, when we were wrecking and making the notes and figuring them out, Mark was very methodical and mathematical. You know, it was a bit like Bertie. Bertie was very mathematical. You know, you could give Bertie a half a dozen figures and, you know, he could figure it all out and, you know, very clever that way, like very intelligent that way. But Mark was called Screech, like. And we went to the rally anyway, pure snow. The rally was a wonderland of snow. And we were in a sweet micro. And he was eating the steering wheel over, like. He was driving, he was right up on top. Perfect car for the conditions. Uh-huh. Every stage, RAC rally, gave him stages, could have been 20 mile long, no bother. One after the other.
Yeah.
20 mile, cross the road, another 20 mile. And the road was pure white. That was like what you see in Lapland.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, we were doing the rally and Mark was driving brilliantly. And every stage, we passed a minimum of 6 cars a stage, maybe more sometimes. It was unbelievable. And then we're getting more confident and more confident. Then we come out of this crest and Pundershaw and Keeler out of this crest and the road went right and there was a fire break. And we sailed straight off the road up the fire break. And I immediately jumped out and I'm sure I went into my waist and snow. Climbed out of that and we went up and we got 10 or 20 boys to come run down the road because it's only a wee micro.
Uh-huh.
Horse right and got her back in the road. We dropped about 3 or 4 minutes, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Away like the clappers again and passed all the boys that passed us. Got up on them again, away we went. We're having a great rally. But then we came to Hamsterley Forest, which again, 20 mile. And we came along this big long, it's like a valley of a forest. And it was really nice going along. And then there was this big, big, long uphill section. And we came to uphill and we knew you could uphill. You know, driving your normal car in the snow.
Uh-huh.
You can't get to the top. And we're going up and going up and going up. And those boys stuck left, right and centre. And we were coming up in between them and getting up and getting up and getting up. And just near the top, there was a boy hand sitting spinning in the middle of the road. And we couldn't get past him. We had to stop. And the minute we stopped, we couldn't get started. So I jumped out anyway. This is in the middle of the night time, pure black, dark.
Uh-huh.
And I got out. TC and Gordon were in the same rally, and they were in a wee Civic.
Yeah.
And I jumped out, and I started pushing, because it's only a wee light car, you know, it didn't need very much to get going.
Uh-huh.
I pushed and pushed, and some other boys that were going over, give me a hand. We pushed. Next thing, Mark got her going, but he couldn't stop, you see.
Uh-huh.
We had to keep going. And here's me going running out. I don't know how far I ran. I ran after him. I really mean, I ran. I ran maybe a kilometer after him,
yeah,
trying to get him to get back into the car. We got up the top and got on the flat to somewhere where he knew that we could get going again.
Going again, uh-huh.
We got there on the stage and we were the very last character through that stage.
Right.
Very, very last character.
Uh-huh.
We finished that rally. We finished that rally in Chester. McRae won that rally.
Yeah, that must have been...
I think he might have won the World Championship in that rally.
That must have been 95 then. What have been then, the year he won the championship and all then too? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not great with years for that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
McRae won the rally and I think he won the World Championship. I couldn't be wrong about that now.
Right.
Uh-huh. Either or anyway.
Yeah.
I remember me and Mark coming down in the swing micro and driving up on the big ramp. GB ramp is gigantic.
Yeah.
Huge big sign behind it. RAC or Rally GB or Network Q, whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
Me and Mark got out and we jumped up on the bonnet and the boy was commentating. He didn't know the frig we were. He was commentating away and here we have Mark Fisher and Roy Kennedy. Congratulations, boys. We're up cheering. The team had to finish it.
It was as good as winning the rally for you.
It was as good as winning. And we have a fantastic photograph of that. If you're ever in Jerry McGarty's workshop, there's a picture of
him. Uh-huh.
And the year before that, Kevin, or the year after that, we had a works drive with SEAT that year.
It was the following year then, yep. Uh-huh.
We were on the SEAT works team. Danny Sordo was a junior driver at that time. Uh-huh. Mark Marty was his co-driver, who's went on to, he's been co-driving in the World Championship ever since. And I think, I can't remember the other Spanish driver, but there's two other works drivers uh-huh. there. And we were all part of that, we had all the gear. It was our first time in a works team, man.
Yeah.
And now Yoke broke down, broke a drive shaft. And, oh, we broke a drive, on one of the spectator stages, we broke a drive shaft. But we had a drive shaft with us. Such as Mark's brain, you see.
Yeah.
He had all the perishable bits in the car. So we broke a drive shaft and Milbert and one of them spectator stages, and we got out and we changed the drive shaft and we got all put back together and away we went and we arrived in Park Fermo last, completely last in the RAC rally.
Uh-huh.
When we were leaving Park Fermo in the morning, we were the last car to leave it. That is the truth. And what's more, there was around four in front of us. There's two French or Italian boys and a round four, and their ambition was to get around the rally.
Uh-huh.
Was to just get around the whole rally. So you can imagine those. Yeah, do you remember round four?
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Aye, the umbrella gear shift in the middle. Yep.
Uh-huh. And we won this just to round four, and we came to the first. Radnor and Wales was the first days that morning of the second day, and we were completely last. And we arrived up at the stage, and of course, a lot of the drivers had done it in the dark here in the morning. The time we got there was 12 o'clock in the day, broad daylight. We came up at the start of the stage, and I looked at this round four in front. Now, don't forget, Kevin, I'm winning Donegal rallies in the Circuit Islands,
yes.
And Killarney's, and, you know, and here we were sitting up here, and I looked over at Fisher, and I says to him, "Hey, sir," I says, "I'm giving you 1 mile to catch that frigging thing in front of us." He says, 1 mile to catch the pass of mine. So, of course, great to get at her. And we took off at the start of the stage and away like a clappers. And, of course, he just drove the socks off everything.
Uh-huh.
And probably within 1 mile, we did catch the boy. They were lovely. The two fellows, Italians or French boys, uh-huh. were lovely. Right? Nicest people you can meet. Pulled over right away. We flew past them. Way down the stage like a clappers. And a stage or two later, Kevin, the whole thing gave up again.
Right.
Something else broke, and all the mechanics in the SEAT factory couldn't have fixed her. End of story.
Yes.
End of story. I'll never forget that. And often afterwards, Mark would say that. He says, Kenny looked over at me and says, 1 mile. I go and catch that fringer.
Yes. You were going home, but it didn't, was it?
Yeah. You know, when you think about it, like,
uh-huh.
Anyway, that was me and Mark's GP, so it was
yeah.
And I also had GP, isn't it? Also did GP with Stephen Finlay.
Oh yeah, uh-huh. I thought it was a few years later then, yeah. Uh-huh.
I suppose it was, I don't think.
Because you done it with Bertie then in 99.
That 99, you know, the
We did
a two-car team, also, Mark.
Uh-huh.
And I remember people thinking, Jesus, World Rally Cars were only coming on the scene at that time.
Uh-huh.
And we had two World Rally Cars out of Pro Drive.
Yeah.
A 98 and a 99 car. And we were part of the Pro Drive All-Stars team.
Uh-huh.
With the other drivers in as well. John Paps from Greece. Rui Madeira from Spain. There's a Polish driver called Marcin Hollowitz, and Richard Tuttle was there. Anyway, that was the team. And I, looking back on that, Kevin, I'm so glad we did that. Or the Fishers did that.
Uh-huh.
When you think about it now, when you look back and everything has happened.
Yeah.
They did that,
mm-hmm.
I mean, was that not a fantastic thing to do? I remember Mark doing that rally, sir. And he was smiling from ear to ear all the way around that rally.
Yeah.
He was and he was flying. He was going like the clapper. Uh-huh. Eric was always, slow down, sir. You're going too fast. He's beating us, so, you know. And Bert was that concentrating on Mark. He couldn't focus on what we were doing. He was focused on Mark all the time.
Yes.
And McKinstry was on that rally too, Kenny.
That's right, you're in the group A.
That's right. Well, us and Mark finished maybe one or two places apart. I think Mark might have been, we were 21st and Mark might have been 19th maybe.
Something like that, 19th, 18th.
Right about that. But I think looking back, wasn't it a great thing to do?
Yeah.
People say, you know, people say you should have done it because now look what happened. They did it. Employment, that was doing their thing, what they most enjoyed in life doing. Father and son, rallying, and their rallying was in their blood, and doing so well, and really enjoying themselves. I'm so pleased that that happened. I think it was great.
And to be part of it as well, too, to be inside of all that, too. Nice.
That's right. That's the best seat in the house, like.
Yeah.
So you think back to 89 or whatever it was, right, the way through. You know, and it was just an unbelievable experience. And I suppose sporting, living your life, how you should conduct yourself. There's so many things you could have learned from them days. Like, that I cherish this very day. Like,
yeah. You see the way you speak about Bertie, like it's, you know, the respect you had for him and his family and everything else, it just shines through there, doesn't it? You know,
it does. And there's not a rally goes by, Kevin, even right up to now, and this is 2020, we haven't done any rallies this year. Uh-huh. Right up to now, like, I still attribute any of my success that I have now, attribute to the learning process way back in them years and the benefits of the fishery years. And, you know, that's all, I'm carrying that forward now for other people. Like,
You're passing that on. You're involved now with the MA
Co-Driving Academy. You know, you try and instill some of them qualities. It's all about the sport and understand the rules and write your pace notes and doing all that. You have to have, you know, you have to have a good understanding of everything, and you need to know your place.
Yeah.
Knowing your place is really important in rallying. So anyway, I could talk all day about the fishers and the tragedy. Fell them everything ever since, like, and again, this room here is bedecked with our success, like, you know, I'll just show you this. I don't know if you're going to use this in the podcast, like, but you know, can you see that up there?
Oh yeah. You're a young boy then.
fine young fellow then, like. And there, you can see that one.
Oh yeah.
And then there's Ali. That's Ali there. And very quickly, I'll do this one for you, if you can see it.
Oh, lovely, yeah. That's in the Acropolis, is it? In the 206?
That's the Acropolis, eh? You know, if you look at the smile on that boy's face there, right?
Yeah.
That's Gordon and me and Stephen there. It's just behind Mark, Stephen Finlay.
Might
see him. And you can't see Brendan Kelly sitting in that car, but you can't quite see him.
Right, yeah. Such memories, isn't it, you know?
Great memories, eh? Great memories.
Yeah.
And should look at that there, even. You were in here before, were you not? You were in here before?
No, never was, no, never was. No.
That's the helicopter there, look.
Yeah.
All the way, and I mean, I could walk around here all day and talk about everyone I pictures. But so that was the fishers, and you know, what can you say that hasn't already been said? Like,
yeah, that's, you know, they were just ambassadors for the sport and continue to be to this day, aren't they? You know, like, Alistair's took on that mantle so well as well.
They were very responsible, like, I mean, responsible champions, like, I mean, the organizers would always ask Bertie's opinion, like, you know, they might bring Bertie up one for the rally and say, look, we're thinking of doing this. What do you think about that? And he would give him his honest opinion. It wouldn't be his opinion that would benefit him. Oh, don't do that because we're not very good at this or whatever.
No.
He would give an honest opinion and give up his time freely, like he did for the McGaw rally. I mean, it's an occasion.
Him and Austin was the first spectator or, you know, crew to go out there and do, I think, a safety crew beforehand, though, wasn't it? Like,
that's right, on the year the rally was reinstated again. You know, so it was people like Bertie who you could count on, like, I mean, people like that, when the sport was on his knees, like, he was there, and he came back and played a vital role in making it happen, like, you know, and, you know, that's what about them, like, or, he always had a great view on things and could give you an alternative option that you might not have thought of yourself, like.
Yeah. I can always think outside the book, and even, like, you can think, was it 2000, the Summit Rally? Like, you know, rallying was on its knees there and then too. and he took the bull by the horns and got a, you know, organized an event and brought, you know, Vatten and Waldegard, all them guys over here.
Mickler, yeah.
Uh-huh.
I made that a unique event at a time when we couldn't, that was what year? That was 2000.
But that, like, there had been no rallying that year up to that point, really, had there, you know?
Well, that foot and mouth was 01.
Aye.
So it wasn't 01 because the Fisher crash was 01.
Aye, so it was I think it was 2000, yeah.
Anyway, but he gladly gave up his time and his expertise.
Yeah.
And it was great to get an opinion off him, no matter what you do. Like.
Uh-huh.
You know, walk here, people often say when somebody's gone, you know, they're sadly missed and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And this race, they're very sadly missed, and I knew them very well.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's not a rally goes by that I wouldn't think of them at some point during the rally.
Yeah, some week.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. And what would they think now if they're looking down? What would they be thinking now? Look at the shape of the soil get here. Still doing the rallies.
He's still going.
Aye. Well, if I'm running, I feel it's a wee bit of the fisher in me that's bringing that out. You know what I mean? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So that was that, Kevin, really. And, 2000, actually, in the year 2000 was Stephen Van Leeuwen.
Uh-huh.
We did five or six rallies. And there's a funny story. Hey, I was only thinking about this today there. Stephen said he was going to do a few rallies, and Malcolm Wilson said, come over and do the Malcolm Wilson rally. He says, we have a Focus here that we're going to put in the museum. This Focus was McRae's car that had just won the safari. I don't know if I've told you this before or not.
Yeah.
So, this is my first year to rally with Stephen. I hadn't, of course, I'd known him, compete against him. He's always a wine man, great man for the crack.
Uh-huh.
He's very subdued sort of boy, but he's a great man for the crack. You enjoy his company anywhere, like. Anyway, over we went to do the Malcolm Wilson rally, but we were double O car for the benefit of just going around, getting the feel of the car, getting Stephen back into it again. So that was all right. We did the first, we went the first stage. Beautiful car, martini colors. Fresh from, or had won the safari the previous whatever.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of the roll bars were on the outside of. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
I think so.
That's
my vision of it now, Kevin. But yeah. maybe that's not what it was, but that's my vision now of what it was then. Maybe uh-huh. I could be soiled a wee bit. But anyway, irrespective, we got the rally first stage finally, like some driver, like where you went. But he's only getting used to it, like, you know, driving her, but second stage getting going a bit better, third one really flying. Fourth one really getting the hammer down. You think we're in the rally. Fifth stage, we're getting faster and faster. And I was reading away at the organizer notes, and I was wondering, was it what attempts slow down a wee bit or tidy it up a bit or whatever? And I felt it coming from a wing of corners before it happened. I'm like, here we come down on big wide slide this way and a wide slide that way. Next thing out to the edge of the road, over we go, and we roll the car over twice down into the bog, like, and wild bit of filling. Oh, what do we do now? So eventually got the car back over on her wheels, or she was on her wheels when she stopped. Finally pushed her back up onto the road, and she was still driving, which was all, you know, the planet was down, the roof was down, so on.
Uh-huh.
And next thing we went on, pottering down the stage, but not going very fast. And then he said, I think she's all right, and he put his foot down to go. Turned into the left-hand corner fast again. Next thing, my door fell off. The complete door fell off the car. I was sitting here and there was outside. Door fell off the car. He looked over. He says, what the fuck is going on there? He says, oh, my book. I said, oh, Jesus, we better stop and get it. So I jumped out. I'm sure as God. I jumped out. I ran 50 meters back up the road to get the door. And got that word. You can imagine carrying the door, even if it's a bit come down. And because them cars, the door hinges and everything were lightweight on them, were engineered in such a way
uh-huh.
to take them off easy and do things.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm not a great mechanic, but I don't claim to be either. But like, I'm handy enough, I can do some things. Like,
yeah.
Anyway, surprisingly enough, I was able to hang the door on the hinges and drop it on, get back on. And away we went. The end of the day, Stephen says to me, oh, imagine if we landed back to fucking Wilson with no door on her and her ready to go to the museum on Monday. And all the shape of her, the roof was down. Oh, Jesus, what a habit. Oh, that's a family. Oh, Jesus Christ. Wilson eventually arrived. Malcolm eventually arrived and seen the yard. You couldn't fucking trust his three other. All right, that was her taking away from us then.
Yeah.
So our next rally then, getting by right, was a Granite City rally up in Aberdeen. And again, we're just going to do the rally, going to get him back in, you know, not to go and set a world record rally.
I haven't done any rally in for 5 or 6 years probably at that stage, haven't you?
I'd say mid-90s, maybe.
Uh-huh.
Whatever notion he took, he's going to do all these rallies. So that was great. I was a co-driver. I was over the moon. Yes. His birdie had stopped. He's focused on Mark. So this opened up another opportunity for me, which is great. So anyway, went to Granite City. We tested the day before on a wide road, but he got the feel of it and all, okay. So we went then the first stage. And this is way up, Aberdeen, up that country. Like, we went the first stage. And away we went down the first stage. And I was now reading the notes and through the corners and so on. I was thinking to myself, fucking hell, this some driver. I felt like you're on McCall McRae, you know. I said, this is some driver. I mean, I looked over and I thought, Jesus. Unbelievable driver. Right?
Yeah.
But we're number 3 or 4 in the rally. And we're poorly seated and the seating beat us in the end. We're fast in the first 3 stages.
Right.
We went to the 4th stage, which was maybe 12 mile long. And we caught a boy in a wee metro, Andy Horn was his name. I'll never forget him.
Uh-huh.
And they couldn't see us. Like. And we were right up behind him. And they broke our headlights, they broke our windscreen. And we had to drop way back and all. And any chance we thought we might have got past him, but he couldn't see us behind. Uh-huh. Our car was, we finished the rally 2nd. Not to him. Marcus Dodd won the rally. We were 2nd. Like.
Right.
We should have won the rally.
Uh-huh.
We were buses, only for a week delayed. But anyway, you don't dwell on these things. That happened and you move on.
Yeah.
Then, Killarney. Killarney in 2000.
Uh-huh.
Very unfancied. I think we're number 5 or 6 in that rally. Uh-huh. Unfancied, really. Like, Nesbitt was the big balls then.
Yeah. And the car was just plain white or something, wasn't it?
Plain white. Mm-hmm. That's right. The car was plain white. And not a brilliant start. I think we were top 4, maybe top 5 in the first block of stages. The more we would go on, the better we got, like, the faster we got. And the more Stephen got into it, unbelievable driver, Kim. Unbelievable driver. Right? The more he got into it, and his car control, see when you're sliding, high speed, no. His car control was 2nd and on. And flying through the stages, I could feel him getting faster and faster. And of course, me and him were working really good together and all.
Uh-huh.
And Nesbitt was leading, we were 2nd. And I remember chatting to Bertie. Bertie was at the rally because Mark was in the rally. Him and Gordon were in the Group N Pro Drive Impreza.
Uh-huh.
And Bertie was at the rally. And I was saying to Bertie on the Saturday night, if you have a spare tenner, put it on us for tomorrow. Because I feel we're fit to win this. It was raining all coming the next day. Anyway, we went up the gap. And first thing in the morning, saying Nesbitt was leading by 24 seconds. And we took 15 or 16 of them on the gap. And the next days, we took 2 or 3. But on the next stage, we spun and we give him back 6 seconds. On the next stage, he ran out of petrol. It's well documented that he ran out of petrol, you know.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And that was it. We went on to win the rally.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think that was my 7th victory in Killarney, maybe.
Uh-huh.
You know, well, anyway, that was Steve and I. And then Yas is on the ramp. I remember having great pleasure. We were being interviewed on the ramp and they said, Stephen, okay, now yeah, you finish here. When's your next event? And Stephen says, well, that was a May, you know, a May bank holiday weekend, the start of May. Our next rally is in 2 weeks' time in the Acropolis in Greece. Maybe 3 weeks' time, you know, that was just a couple of weeks away or 3 weeks away.
Uh-huh.
I'll never forget that. I still can hear that clearly in my mind. Like,
you know, everybody else be thinking, no, we're going to Donegal or maybe do Gavin's warm up or something.
That's right, we're going to the Acropolis. Like. God. And even to go to the Acropolis, and you know, we were essentially a customer. We were in the customer team.
Uh-huh.
We were the only customers there. So really we were on the side of the works team. So you had Colin McRae, you had Carlos Sands, you had Peter Solberg and Stephen Finley. That was the team.
Mm-hmm.
And all the trappings to go with the works team we had.
Yeah.
All in the same hotels, all the same meters. All the same transports to and from, everything was going, we were part of. We were essentially,
uh-huh.
Except we were a customer, you know, And we were running further back, of course, than the rest of the boys. And we come off the last stage on this, whatever it was, the Friday. And we're coming down the mountains in Greece. I'll never forget it. And in them days, John Millington, the fellow I was telling you, was our AD way back. He's now with M-Sport. He's the team manager for M-Sport. And Millie, he comes on the radio to me and he says, Rory, could you give me your total times there for your last two stages? Of course, I was right on the ball. I had this all done. So I give him the times over the radio. And Stephen and me were going down on the road section with the headsets on, driving along. And I give him the times. I say, oh, how do you figure, Millie? Where do you reckon that leaves us now, Millie, in the overall standings? And he comes back and he says, I just like to confirm that you're in sixth place overall. And I, even hearing that at that time, me and Finlay, we had some laughter ourselves. Stephen, he laughed his head off. And all these boys were behind us. Panizzi, Armin Schwartz, I think Kankin might have been behind us. He had a problem.
Right.
So, why don't them other works drivers,
yeah.
even who else is there? Oh, your man who drove for Mitsubishi too.
Delica or some of them.
What call him again? Harry Rovenpera.
Oh, yes, yes.
He was all behind us.
And at that stage, you know, like the world, you know, the top drivers, there was probably 10, 12 works cars, proper works cars. Wouldn't it have been like easily?
Oh, I'd say so, yeah. Well, there was those three works cars in our team. James Gray and Silver. And every other team had a minimum of two, maybe three.
Yeah.
You know, Citroën were there, Mitsubishi were there, Ford, obviously. What do you call him? No, was he there? Was Citroën going then? Maybe not.
I just Peugeot would have been there coming maybe around about that time, wouldn't they, as well?
I can't quite remember, but they were still good. I have it here somewhere, the results of that end of day one night. Anyway, it was a great highlight. It was a fantastic moment. Then we were on sixth the next day on the road. So, first stage, we broke a compression strut near the end of the stage, and we tried to fix it. But we had it all strapped up, you know, and all. And we thought that was going to be all right, but the stage are that rough. And we went no distance, thing broke again. There was no super rally or nothing in the end day, so.
No.
That was the end of it, I'm afraid. So, it was great when it lasted, but it didn't last. Hyundai were going then as well.
That's right,
Alistair McRae was driving for Hyundai.
That's right, yes. And the accent WRC at that time, all that.
That's right.
And you also done GB with them later in the year too.
Went to GB in November then, and we had a very good car, a different car for GB, one of the works cars, really, really good one, and going really well as well. Going really well on the first couple of stages, and then something happened to the clutch, and when we came into service at Plymouth Wells, mechanics worked at it, but we had to go into our maintenance because we couldn't get it fixed in time. And say we were, I don't know what place, we were top 10 anyway. And Gwendaf and all was behind us, you know, and they were all in proper cars then too. Oscar McRae was behind us. And we got the thing repaired, but we dropped 20 seconds or 30 seconds in penalties. And we went to the next stage, which is Cricken, which is a fantastic stage. And Stephen was going too fast. I mean, he was pushing really hard and too fast on one corner. We got about three quarters way around the corner. And the back of our clipped the tree and spun us around and put us down a big bank. End of story, and that was the end of it.
That he stepped away from rallying again then at that point as well, too, didn't he?
I'm trying to think, did he ever rally since?
I don't think so. You know, there's always been this rumour that he's going to come back and he's going to be back, but it never happened. Like, he was such a naturally talented driver that could step in and, you know.
Fantastic, and a great fella. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But back in the day, he was nearly as fast as McRae back in the day, except he didn't win, you know. He had the ability back then,
And again, lacking the seat time that, you know, if he had the seat time that McRae had and these other guys had, you know.
Exactly.
So that kind of left you high and dry then, going into sort of like 2001 then.
Well, 2001 was the helicopter accident. January. And believe it or not, Kevin, believe it or not, there was no rallies in 2001 at all.
The foot and mouth and all, anyway.
So, ironic again, isn't it, to think
that
accident at the start of the year and there's no rallies. They might have came later in the year, November or October, November.
Yeah, it was quite late on the year,
Almost no rallies in Ireland that year.
Yeah.
So then, 2002 came. No, what happened? near the end of 01, the Galloway Hills Rally was on. And Dick Carmack and Brilli rang me up one day and he says, I have a young driver doing this rally, would you go with him? And he said, oh, man. And anyway, it turns out it was Alistair Kennedy. And he was going to McKinstry's World Car.
Uh-huh.
So I said to Dick, Dick was the main man in Brilli at the MDs. And we were, all through the years, we were Brilli. And I did a bit of coordination for them over here. We set up a lot of tests that they had over here and worked with them a good lot. So when this opportunity came up, Dick rang me and said, would you go? I said, no better man, I'll go, surely. Off we went to the rally. Going well again. Second place, Mark Higgins was leading in a Group A car. One of Bill Gwynn's Group A cars. We were second in Kenny's World Car. And on one of the stages then, not long after the start, the gear stick, they were a H pattern, they're not flippers. Like.
Yeah.
Whatever happened, the gear stick broke. You know, it fell out like that. And we stopped. And of course, between us, we started working on it to get it back in and so on. And during that operation, I lost half a finger in my hand. I was down working on something. And whatever Alistair did, or I don't know if he did, or whatever happened, the gearbox turned and my hand went in. And only because I had a big mechanic's glove on me, I lost all my fingers. I'm still, I was very lucky to save these ones. Like.
Yeah.
You can see the shape, man. I'm not that. Right. But, you know, your hands are really good.
Yeah.
Still not right. Oh, I got wide body cuts, sir.
Yeah.
In the middle of a stage, in the middle of the forest, in the middle of Scotland.
Uh-huh.
And a bit, what happened to me? So the car was in a gear and he drove up the road and he held my hand. I guess he drove up to where the spectators and he got out and says, this man needs help. He's hurt his hand really bad. In the meantime, I got out and all I want to do, Kevin, is lie down and go to sleep. And I knew myself I shouldn't do that because that's the shock of the.
Yeah.
So finally, I only stopped the stage and I got the ambulance and the ambulance came in and the boys cut the glove off me and my hand was in bits. And they transferred me to Dumfries Hospital. And then Dumfries could do nothing for me. They sent me to Carlisle. Carlisle could do nothing for me because it was microsurgery I needed. They sent me then to Glasgow Royal Infirmary. And I arrived there at 7 o'clock on a Saturday night and they did the operation at 11 o'clock that night. And I got home then a couple of days later, or a day or two later. Like, that was the start of me in Austria. You know, where I was thinking, my God, I... Things have far changed. Like.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's where we were.
Uh-huh.
And then O2 came around.
Uh-huh.
Brendan and me were doing a few rallies, Brendan Kelly.
Uh-huh.
We did Mayo, I think. I don't think we did Galway.
Right.
We did Mayo. And at the same time, Seamus Burke in America. No, I'll start the story right. At the same time, again, I'm very back with Dave Richard, or Dave Campion in ProDrive, who was one of their senior managers. And Dave Campion had said to me, they're going to do the American Championship and they've got an American driver, would have been interested in sitting on them. And I said, well, of course, this driver is called Ramana Nagaman. He's an American fellow, but he's Indian descent. Lovely fellow. I got to know him in between times. So they had Lovell out there rallying, you see.
Yep.
Subaru America also wanted an American driver. So Ramana was the American driver. And Dave Campion said to me, would it be interesting? And I said, I would. So a bit of this going on back and forward, and then it all went quiet. And I didn't hear anything. And I rang Dave one day, and Dave said, that's all gone quiet. I heard no more about it. And I said, right. Coincidentally, Seamus Burke rang me. Seamus is an Irish American. He's from Donegal, actually, but he's American since 1980 or something. Seamus rang me up and says, would you be interested in coming out and doing the first round, which is the Snowdrift Rally in Maine. I says, well, I was on to, somebody else is on to me about this, but it's not moving forward. So when I turn around and said, okay, I'll go with you. And say that was on Saturday. And what then happened on Monday? Campo was on the phone, Rory. Would you be able to go on Thursday and we'll fly you here? And I said, well, I've already arranged with somebody else. So anyway, I didn't go with Ramana. A fellow called Mike Kidd went with
him. Right.
Mike Kidd's a fellow I know, he's a co-driver as well. So he went with him at the beginning. So I went out and did 5 rallies in America that year.
Uh-huh.
It was Seamus Burke. We finished 3rd in one and 4th in another. And with a couple of indiscretions as well. But anyway, we broke down a time or two. Which is a great experience, like, and really enjoyable to go and do.
Yeah.
And as well that year, as the year Brendan and me had a big crash in Killarney.
Yeah.
and ended up in the hospital very badly injured. Broke my pelvis in three or four places. I think I broke my ankle, and broke my teeth, and broke my sternum, broke my coccyx, you know, think at the bottom of your back. And what else did I do? Bit my tongue or something. One of them weird things.
Yeah.
But anyway, I was bad, but Bren was far worse. Bren was very lucky to survive that. Like, he knows that today, and it was a really bad accident. And that accident, the catalyst given to the OK board and the SOS board was from that day forward. So we had that accident. And do you remember the boys in Monaghan? They call the boys in Monaghan, the wee Civic. And
oh, Chris killed. Rogers and Sian, yep.
Sian.
Yep.
That was the same year. Was that?
Yeah, that was a bit earlier that year, wasn't it?
That was the Monaghan rally, which would have been April. And our rally was Killarney in May.
By the start of May, yes, it was a couple of weeks later.
There, after that rally, SOS, OK boards came on. Because when we crashed, everybody just drove past us.
Right.
We were sitting there crashed on the side of a building on the side of the road. Dave was knocked completely out, completely unconscious. And every car, 30 seconds, we were number 11, number 12, number 13, number 14. Kept going to number 30, 31 stopped. And number 31 was George Tracy.
Right.
He stopped and he came back. And I think number 32 was Gene Meekin. He also stopped. And then they come back. And I remember them getting me out of the car and giving out my pelvis broken four places. And I stepped out over the door bars. We're in a very good, we're in a Mitsubishi Evo 9 or 8 or whatever.
Aye, it's like a strong car.
It was a DGM car, it was the best you could get, brand new car. And I remember stepping out over the door bars, standing up and walking around the car and walking across the road into a woman's garden and lying down on the grass in the woman's garden. And me with my pelvis broken four places. I broke an ankle too, or, you know. And there's, what do you call them, Adrian McIlvenny and Paul Goodman were in the rally. They're coming around the corner, and they're in car, they were slowed down, you know. They come around the corner, and they're in car, cameras on, shows me walking across the road. You think I'm walking on the moon, you know. Because here, like, across the road, like, that was a great bad accident. And we're lucky to survive, I can tell you. You know. So that was then, and DG took me then, David Greer. He took me to Lurgan Park then as a comeback. At the end of July, that happened at the start of May.
And were you fully fit by that stage? Or?
Oh, I was not fully fit. But I was Lurgan Park, we thought it'd be easy enough, we think.
Yeah, you know, right back in now just to see if you'd...
plenty of time, more relaxed and everything. So that was a comeback rally. Yeah. I did that with David. I think we were going well that day again. Second or third, or maybe fourth. Right on there, sir. Anyway, I have a picture of that there too. So, did that with Davey, which is great to get back. And I was very grateful to him because he took me back, you know, because he was running Brendan and the.
And the Eagles.
So, you know, very, very, very grateful for him to take me back and get me back again. But then again, I got the nod to go to America again. But this time, Nick Cormick from Pirelli came on to me and says, right, we're going out to America. We're running three cars in the last round of the American Championship. Mark Lovell, Ramon Alagaman, who's the guy I was telling you about. And the third driver is going to be Tapio Loy. Sorry, we're running four cars. Mark Lovell, Ramon Alagaman, Johnny Milner, and Tapio Loy. We want you to go with Tapio. And I says, what about that? He's Finnish. Does he know the Finnish pace notes? Yep. Perfect English pace notes. I said, that's perfect. So one way. Delighted, there's a full works team again. Subaru America. Subaru America, I'm stuff here, Subaru America, somewhere over there. Anyway, yeah, full treatment again, out to America. Met up with Tapio, no recce. These rallies are, there's no DVDs or no nothing. Pace notes, off you go. So we went through the pace notes as best we could. So, was there no recce or was there recce? No, there's no recce, I'm really sorry. So anyway, we were all called for a test on the Wednesday morning. I was out there from Monday. The rally was on Thursday, Friday, or Friday, Saturday. We all arrived out there. Big Robbie was our mechanic, one of our mechanics, Robbie McGurk. He was on our car. So that morning, the four cars are all lined up. Beautiful cars. All, you know the 555s on them?
Yes.
There were the 555 cars, but that the big bananas on them, but the 555 was written on them.
Right, so yes.
Super American, all this sort of stuff. So anyway, we're at the shakedown that or at the test, private test, and Lovell, he goes up and down the road, and then Ramana goes up and down the road, then Johnny Miller goes up and down the road, and then we go up and we write the notes, Tappy on me.
Mm-hmm.
So then we come back down, and then when our turn came to go up the stage, now bearing in mind, this is October, and me and Brent were nearly killed in May.
Mm-hmm.
We start off 3-2, or on the test run, we went gravel road, like, away we went, and Kevin, we didn't go a mile, we came around a corner of a big, big Scandinavian slide, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
Well, that's where all the rack around the road is here, and the back of her just touched the bank, spun us around this way, hit the other bank, down the road, rolling and smashing down the road, and I'm sitting in there, because here, I'm saying, oh my God, not again, oh Jesus, fearing I was going to be killed again, like,
yeah,
smashing and banging down the road, and finally the whole car comes to stop on four wheels, and I'm sitting there for a second, I'm going, thank God I'm still alive, Tappy's still alive. And just a second later, the whole thing burst into flames. Well, the engine bay burst into flames. Jump out, and now we're a mile, not a mile, we're half a mile away from where we started, or maybe a bit more. I got out, bearing in mind now, I'd broken my pelvis and my ankle.
Uh-huh.
Here's me legging it down the road, running down the road, back to where the boys were, roaring, come quickly, the car's on fire. Anyway. I like it down, and the boys are looking at me. What do you mean the car's on fire? I said, come, fire extinguisher. Anyway, finally the car got the message. All the fire extinguishers flying back up the road to where the car was. The car was a full blaze on around the bonnet. The time they got back. So they got it put out eventually. And the car was destroyed. The car was wrecked.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can imagine a car after burning for 10 minutes.
Yeah. You
know, more, all the fires. So anyway, Tapio, I says to Tapio, what way? And he goes, I don't know what. So don't forget that a big, you know, pro dive works team, big Nigel Riddle was a manager. Campo was there. He was one of the team managers from so on. So Tapio says, right, okay. Fall down, asked to come into the motorhome. And they said, what happened? How could this happen? Professional driver, come out here. All this investment to come out here to this rally. Tapio said, I think something broke on the back. And I went, what? I think something broke on the back of the car. And the car did this. And the boys went, I don't think so. And they says, just let you know, you're released now. You can do whatever you want. Your rooms are paid for in a hotel. Your airline tickets are valid for when you go home on Monday or whatever day.
Mm-hmm.
You can stay if you want. But if you want to do something else, you're released from the team. In other words, red card.
Uh-huh.
So we went away. Oh, Jesus, I was wild. I was wild. State of the car's wrecked. Eh?
Yeah.
Just rolled and then burned. Like.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't very professional. Wasn't very professional looking. So we went back to the hotel then. It's a bit like coming back to Mount Airgill, you know.
Uh-huh. Right?
This is way up. This rally was the Lake Superior Rally in Michigan. And we went up there, and very quickly word got around that the car crashed and wrecked and we weren't doing the rally. There's a pile of Irish boys out there from Chicago, and they were up at the rally, and they were all mad. On the one rally, they haven't had to do the rally. We have an Evo 3 or an Evo 2. We'll bring it up from Chicago. Yeah, anyway, they got on to Tapio and says, Tapio, we will get this car. It's a very good car. No cost. Bring it up. You drive it. Tapio, no, I can't do that. We were number one in the rally. Number one. So anyway, they convinced Tapio to take the car again. And the boys rang the team in Chicago, which was 400 miles, maybe 500 miles away.
Uh-huh.
And the boys get up in the middle of the night, or get loaded up in the middle of the night with this car. The car hadn't turned away for 6 months or something. Loaded her up, drove the 500 or 600 miles up to where we were, way up in northern Michigan. And I woke up the next morning, pulled over the curtains in the hotel, looked out in the car park. Here was the boys of the yoke. She was a Mitsubishi Evo 2, I think. Tapio went out and took it for a drive and went away somewhere driving it and came back, and there was a few things to do. Me and him sat down and he says, yeah, Roy, you will not believe this is a very good, very fast car. This car is very fast, yeah. I think it'll be okay. And I says, right, okay. He says, but I don't know. We'll try it. We will try. These guys are keen that we do the event. So I says, right, we'll do it. So we got this Evo 2 and the boys got it all stickered up and ready. And she was a wee bit out of She didn't look ideal sitting among the Subarus.
Yeah.
But don't forget, Mitsubishi were there as well. Subaru were there to beat Mitsubishi in the championship. That's why the four
killers. Yeah, that's why the whole big team was there, yeah.
That's why the big team was there in the first place. They wanted to win the championship, you see. It was quite important for Subaru to win the North American championship. Anyway, we had those big Mitsubishis. Number one. Geez, I'll never forget. We went the first stage anyway, and we nearly had a deer ran across in front of us. We'll never forget that. Tapio, fantastic driver again, you know, like slides through the corners. No, you know, big long slides, like no problem. A gravel rally, obviously. But anyway, something happened there. She broke a drive shaft, and we limped in, and the boys fixed it, and we smoked boys. We don't want to wreck your good car. No, you must go. Insisted we go again. Right, yeah, we went in the night time, and something else, the electrics or something, gave up on her. No, not at all. They came out and towed us back, and that was the end of it.
Yeah.
Very experience, but just didn't happen. Only,
no. You know. Wasn't meant to be.
Wasn't meant to be, if you like.
End of part one of our chat with Rory. I hope you enjoyed listening to it as much as I did recording it. Next part will be online soon. If you enjoyed it, please like and share and subscribe. Thank you.